Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the apparent turnaround of Barack Obama, who has been a disappointment to liberals and progressives, many of whom consider the president weak and too accommodating to the Republicans who constantly vilify him. James Kloppenberg, professor of American history and chair of the Department of History at Harvard University and author of Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition, joins us to discuss the more assertive candidate on the campaign trail who appears to have his opponent Mitt Romney on the defensive, forcing Romney to either reveal or continue to cover up the full extent of how much wealth he has, how he got it, what taxes he paid, and whether he lied to the SEC or the American people. Then we'll look into the growing financialization of the U.S. and world economies with Osgur Orengazi, the author of Financialization of the U.S. Economy. We will discuss historical examples of empires whose power rises on the back of productive industrial capitalism, followed by domination by the financial sector that eventually cannibalizes the productive sector in pursuit of concentrated financial gain, leading to weakness and collapse. Then finally, we'll go to Moscow for an update on the furious pace with which Vladimir Putin is having his rubber-stamp parliament push through laws that restrict the internet, penalize peaceful protest, and categorize non-governmental organizations as acting as foreign agents. Masha Gessen, the author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin, joins us. Joining us now is James Kloppenberg, the Charles Warren Professor of American History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University. His books include Uncertain Victory, Social Democracy and Progressivism in European and American Thought, 1870 to 1920, The Virtues of Liberalism, A Companion to American Thought, and his new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. Welcome to Background Briefing, James Kloppenberg.
Pleasure to be here.
So the president has a very, very tough commercial now that's playing in the swing states. And some people have described it as brutal. It features, has a voiceover of Mitt Romney singing America the Beautiful, and it shows graphics of jobs outsourced to India, factories outsourced to Mexico, et cetera. So it's playing in Colorado, Florida, Iowa, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Nevada, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. And it seems to suggest that rather than backing down, as Mitt Romney is now asking the president to apologize for pretty much doing what Romney's been doing to him all along, he seems to be doubling down.
Well, I think this is a return to the Barack Obama that most Americans met in the last electoral cycle. He was much more aggressive in the last campaign than he was as president. And part of the point of my book was to try to explain to people why that was true. There's no doubt about what Barack Obama's objectives are. He would like to carry on the tradition of the progressives of the early 20th century and the New Dealers and the Great Society, Lyndon Johnson. But when he became president, he was forced to deal with a very obstreperous Republican party and even members of his own party who didn't want to go along. On the campaign trail, he doesn't have to worry about that. He can focus on his opponent and focus on making his own case. And so we're hearing again the voice of the man who wrote the book, The Audacity of Hope, which is a clarion call to renew the progressive campaigns of the 20th century.
But James Kloppenberg, I spoke with your colleague at Harvard, Robert Putnam, who runs the Sequoia Retreat. And when Barack Obama was at Harvard, apparently he was quite fond of these weekend retreats where, you know, labor leaders would sit down with the head of the Christian Coalition. And Putnam told me that he felt that Obama was genuinely interested in bipartisanship and working together and crossing the aisle and solving problems. And indeed, in an interview which will air on Monday on CBS's morning program with Charlie Rose, the president says that he thinks that there's no doubt that I underestimated the degree to which this town politics trumps problem solving. And he went on to say that his biggest mistake in his presidency was thinking that this job was just about getting the policy right. It's also about telling a story to the American people. So on that, on both of those, I think he's basically preempted the criticism of so many people on the left. One, that he's too accommodating to the Republicans, and or at least he's beginning to wake up to that. And two, that somehow or other he has not sold his own programs and his own successes.
Well, I think you've put your finger on it. I think for the first time in his life, when he was elected to the presidency, he found that the strategy that had served him so well up to that point was no longer effective. And I think it did take him some time to shift gears away from the attempt to forge coalitions, which had worked for him from the time he was a teenager, actually through his time in the United States Senate. And it wasn't until he found himself in the presidency that he found he simply couldn't get the other side to meet him, not only halfway, to take even a single step in his direction. So I think it's possible that the new pugnacious Barack Obama that we see and we haven't seen for the last 4 years is simply a chastened version of the earlier Obama. But I think one could hear echoes of the same sort of more strident calls for the revitalization of a Democratic Party and a Democratic progressive movement that were part of his appeal every time he ran for office up to the presidency. It's just that when you're a legislator, you can do a little bit more work behind the scenes to build coalitions. And although he tried to do that as president, he's had notably little success doing it. And I think it's possible that this new voice is the voice of a man who's learned his lesson about the way national politics is working in 2012.
Well, in his interview airing Monday on CBS this morning with Charlie Rose, he says it's not enormity of the decisions. It's not the pace. It's not that I haven't been able to change the atmosphere. It's that I haven't been able to change the atmosphere here in Washington to reflect the decency and common sense of ordinary people, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, who I think just want to see their leadership solve problems. And, you know, there's enough blame to go around for that. So I can understand that he's going to be running on gridlock and the do-nothing Congress. Whether that is going to work for him, what seems to be working for him now is the bind that he has gotten Romney into, where he basically is forcing Romney to either reveal or continue to cover up the full extent of how much wealth he has and how he got it and what taxes he's paid and whether he lied to the SEC or the American people. Romney, you know, is spending this week. He hasn't campaigned since Wednesday, and he's apparently resting up at his New Hampshire estate. And he's not planning to do any public events until Tuesday. James Kloppenberg, what do you think's going on with Romney? Is there going to be is he going to come back fighting like Obama appears to have suddenly turned around?
Well, it reminded me a bit the other day when he offered the shrieking response to the charges in the Boston Globe of the Nixon White House when the first revelations of Watergate came out. You'll probably remember, and most of your listeners who remember Watergate will remember, that initially the White House simply tried to stonewall all of those charges and came out slugging, saying there was nothing to them, that the whole thing was trumped up. It was another indication of the unfairness of the media. And it's not Barack Obama who has put Mitt Romney in this position. It's Mitt Romney himself who's done it. All that the Boston Globe and the New York Times and the Washington Post and other newspapers have done is to make clear the record that he compiled and the reasons why he has amassed a fortune in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It was the kind of casino capitalism, to use the phrase that Robert Reich and a number of other people have started to use, that made Mitt Romney a very rich man. And I think the Obama team is banking on the aversion that most Americans feel toward people who amass enormous amounts of money by accomplishing basically nothing other than lining their own pockets. The entire Bain enterprise is a perfect illustration of what your next guest is talking about in the financialization of the U.S. economy. So much of the increase in income, since the 1980s has gone to people in financial services who don't really make anything. The contrast with Romney's father, who saved the American Motors company and kept it viable for a considerable period of time by making cars, the contrast between him and his son is really quite striking. Mitt Romney has never produced anything except money for himself and his partners. And I think as the Obama campaign makes that clear to the American people, people are going to be a little bit more suspicious of his claims about being a job creator and about being part of the sector that knows how to grow the economy. The only part of the economy that's grown since the 1980s has been financial services, and that money has gone to a very small and indeed shrinking number of people who've become fabulously wealthy, as the buying power of the vast majority of the American people has remained unchanged for the first time in American history.
Again, I'm speaking with James Kloppenburg, the Charles Warren Professor of American History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University, and the author of the new book, Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. You mentioned Mitt Romney's father, who ran for president against Richard Nixon, and gave, I think he pretty much did a data dump of all of his tax returns. Bill Clinton mentioned the other day on television, in contrast to Romney, who's only put out his 2010 return and an estimate for 2011. And I suppose the assumption is the reason that he's stonewalling the rest of the tax returns, particularly the earlier ones in the period now under contention because of the Boston Globe investigation into Romney's claim, of course, that he left Bain Capital in 1999, and the conflicting filings with the SEC that indicate he was in charge of Bain Capital through 2003. So you have the contrast. So the assumption here, at least in my assumption, is that the reason that Romney put the 2010 return out, even though it said that he paid less than 15% in taxes, was perhaps that it's the least incriminating. So here you have the example of the father putting out all of his tax returns and saying, the reason I'm putting all these tax returns out is that I want you to know that my career is not a fluke. You know, lightning didn't suddenly strike. You got Bill Clinton saying that all presidents in the last 30 years have put out all of their tax returns, and John McCain put in the last election in 2008 put out 20 years of his, and Romney is stonewalling on his. It really is beginning to be a smoking gun, surely.
I think so. He was quoted in the papers this morning saying that the reason he hasn't released the tax returns is simply that you can't satisfy the Obama team. And I think that's not going to wash. I think the American people will see right through that. And the only possible assumption is that there is something in those earlier tax returns that he doesn't want the public to know. And when the New York Times offers as its lead editorial a challenge to that approach to revealing his taxes and calls attention to the contrast between him and his father, I think we're moving in the direction in which the Watergate investigation moved, in which eventually, despite the denials that went on for months, even years, the facts themselves basically did in those who were culpable. And it does seem to me as though there may not be any question of criminal guilt here, but the nature of the wealth that Mitt Romney has accumulated and the ways in which he accumulated it, I think, are not going to be attractive from the perspective of most voters. And I think that's what the Obama campaign is banking on. And the longer he delays, it seems to me, the larger the questions loom about not only the ways in which he made that money, but what he did with it, the bank accounts in the Cayman Islands, in the secret Swiss bank accounts, the kinds of things that generally have a kind of unsavory taste in the mouths of voters. And so I think the Obama campaign seems very likely to me to continue pushing on that issue precisely because it's a symbol of what's been going on in the American economy for the last 40 years. You'll notice that so far, at least, Mitt Romney has not had to address the question of what caused the collapse in 2008. And from the perspective, I think, of most observers and most people who study the economy, the problem was precisely the kind of deregulation that he is now calling for as the solution. When he's talking only to Republican crowds, he doesn't have to address that question. But once he finds himself in debates with Barack Obama, it's going to be a very different situation for him. And when he was dealing dealing with his Republican rivals on the campaign trail in the Republican Party. Again, they were all subscribing to the orthodoxy of free market economics as the solution to all of our problems. But when you have to deal with the facts of the years since 2008 and the utter collapse of the economy and the domino effect it's had around the world, it's going to be a much harder sell simply to argue that we should go back to those policies.
So, James Kloppenberg, it's not just Democrats, by the way, who are weighing in on asking Romney to release his taxes. They're at the National Governors Association meeting now underway in Williamsburg. Alabama's Republican government, Robert Bentley, urged Romney to release his taxes. Bill Kristol of the Evening Standard said do it tomorrow, or do it yesterday, I think he said. So you have the candidate Romney up at his lakeside retreat in New Hampshire, obviously spending some days alone reflecting. He's under tremendous pressure from the party, from the right wing of the Republican Party, from powerful kingmakers on the Republican side like Rupert Murdoch, basically saying, you know, his campaign are a bunch of amateurs. I get the feeling that something's going to come out of this when Romney surfaces on Tuesday. He doesn't have too many cards to play. If he has to reinvent his team, that's sort of an admission that he's not doing that well. And apparently, there's a lot of loyalty there with the people that go back to his days of running for governor in Massachusetts.
There's no doubt that that's a different group from the group that was behind the two Bush administrations, and the people, I think, like William Kristol and governors of southern states in the Republican Party have never really cottoned to Mitt Romney. He strikes them too much as the Harvard Business School managerial type, and I think it speaks to the difficulty he had in the Republican primaries convincing members of the hard right that he's one of them. And I think he never has been one of them. I think, for one thing, he's too intelligent to swallow the simplistic nostrums that pour out of the mouths of most members of the hard right now. And for that reason, I think he is vulnerable to his right. And how he's going to deal with that issue is not at all clear to me, because the tradition of right-wing populism in the United States is a tradition that goes back at least to the late 19th century. And it does seem to me as though a lot of NASCAR fans in rural America are not going to be inclined to look favorably on a man who's lived the life that Mitt Romney has lived. And whether that means they would vote for Barack Obama seems to me highly unlikely, but they might just stay home. And that would be devastating for Romney. I mean, what people who study this sort of thing have found in the last several decades is that negative campaigning doesn't necessarily help the candidate who does it, but it can hurt the candidate who's targeted by causing people either on the fence or people who were weak supporters of that candidate just to stay home. And I suspect that's what the Obama campaign is hoping these ads will do. We're a long way from November, and so a great deal could happen between now and then, but it does seem to me as though the Romney team is going to have to come up with something, and I really wouldn't have the slightest idea what that's likely to be. The first salvo, which was simply the shrieking denial, I think is not going to get the job done, because the facts are there. That was what was so striking about the Globe report. It simply printed the SEC page, making clear that the filing indicated that Romney was still in charge. And if either, as you put it in the run-up to the discussion, either he's lying to the SEC, in which case it's something for which he could be, in fact, in trouble, or he's lying to the American people about just how involved he was with Bain. But the further people go into the nature of Bain's business and the kind of deal making that Romney has been involved with that made him a very rich man, the more and more trouble I think he's going to be in, because again and again, Bain made money for its partners by engaging in the kind of leveraged buyouts that made the partners rich and essentially saddled companies with debt that they couldn't sustain, which led them either to go out of business or to be broken up, often with the loss of many jobs. So no matter how you slice that kind of business, it's not a pretty picture for the economy, and especially when you contrast it to the kind of industrial capitalism that his father practiced and that was so characteristic of America in the post-World War II period, that financialization of the U.S. economy. I think the phrase you used when you were describing the work of your next guest is that that financialization cannibalizes the productive parts of the economy. It seems to me that's exactly right. And if you were looking for a poster child for that kind of cannibalization, the several hundred million dollar fortune of Mitt Romney is a perfect illustration of that.
Well, just in closing, James Kloppenberg, it does seem that you touched on the management, or Romney selling himself as a manager for America. And obviously, if Obama could counteract that by saying, you know, America needs a leader, not a manager. But the other card that Romney has to play, the vice president card, that's not looking particularly good either, because he's, you know, he can't go with Christie, because Christie will outshine him and be more interesting than the vice president, be more interesting than the president. He goes with Rob Portman. He goes with a boring guy. And then if he, you know, the unlikely possibility of Condoleezza Rice will just remind people of what a disaster she was in terms of enabling the worst foreign policy in American history almost. So I'm just wrapping this up, but in the last second or so, I think things aren't looking good for Romney.
Well, as I said, we still have several months to go, and right, things could turn around based on developments outside the United States. I mean, the European economy, if it continues to decline, would have repercussions in the American economy, and as everyone knows, the weakness of the economy has had as much to do with the re-election or defeat of incumbent presidential candidates as any other factor. So there are lots of other things in play, but right now I think you're quite right that if you look only at the internal dynamics of the two campaigns, President Obama appears to be energized and seems to be finding the voice that he had in 08 and before that people thought he had lost, whereas the Romney campaign finds itself in a very awkward position, not satisfying either the hard right of the Republican Party and making itself increasingly suspect from the perspective of many people in the mainstream of American politics.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, James Kloppenberg.
Pleasure as always.
Again, I've been speaking with James Kloppenberg, the Charles Warren Professor of American History and Chair of the History Department at Harvard University. His latest book is Reading Obama, Dreams, Hope, and the American Political Tradition. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the financialization of the U.S. economy.